How successful are you at keeping promises? The promise story is what Deuteronomy really is about. It really has as a core three sermons. Three sermons in 3 days cover almost all of Deuteronomy, one of the longer books that we have in the Bible. In it, Moses refers frequently to the word covenant. A covenant is a promise, right? Do you understand that that's what it is? A contract between two people or two groups or whatever. And this whole story in Deuteronomy is about two entities with a covenant between them. Who are these entities? If we go to chapter 7, verse 9, we read these words, "The Lord your God is indeed God. He is the faithful God who keeps his covenant for 1,000 generations." We've heard that term before, haven't we, this morning? "And lavishes his unfailing love on those who love him and obey his commands." One part of the contract or covenant is God. Who comprises the other part of this covenant? Well, in the same chapter, verse 6, we read these words, "You are a holy people who belong to the Lord your God. Of all the people on earth, the Lord your God has chosen you to be his own special treasure." Does that make you feel special? I hope it does. Because you are his treasure. Moses builds on the foundation of the covenant and calls Israel to faithful obedience while reminding them of God's faithfulness in caring for them. He identifies the Ten Commandments as the covenant. Maybe you didn't think of it that way, but listen to these words from chapter 9. "The Lord gave me the two tablets on which God had written with his own finger all the words he had spoken to you from the heart of the fire when you were assembled at the mountain. At the end of the 40 days and nights, the Lord handed me the two stone tablets inscribed with the words of the covenant. So while the mountain was blazing with fire, I turned and came down, holding in my hands the two stone tablets inscribed with the terms of the covenant." Interesting, isn't it? The book of Deuteronomy has three main focuses that I found, at least. Responsibilities to this covenant, warnings about breaking the covenant, and blessings for keeping the covenant. So we'll start with those responsibilities. In chapter 1, we read these words, "Then, just as the Lord our God commanded us, we left Mount Sinai, and traveled through the great and terrifying wilderness. As you yourselves remember, and headed toward the hill country of the Amorites. When we arrived at Kadesh Barnea, I said to you, 'You have now reached the hill country of the Amorites that the Lord our God is giving us. Look, he has placed the land in front of you. Go and occupy it as the Lord, the God of our ancestors, has promised you. Don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged.'" Moving on to chapter 4, a little bit more of the responsibility that these people were given. And now, Israel, listen carefully to these decrees and regulations that I am about to teach you. Obey them so that you may live, so you may enter and occupy the land that the Lord your God of your ancestors is giving you. Now, that was two very definite responsibilities. And we just mentioned the Ten Commandments. You find them in chapter 5. One or two more that we ought to look at. In chapter 6, these are the commands, decrees, and regulations that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you. You must obey them in the land you are about to enter and occupy, and you and your children and grandchildren must fear the Lord as long as you live. It's a progressive thing through the generations. Now, most of our folks here are in middle to a little bit further age. Some of you are a little bit younger yet. I think I'm probably the oldest one standing here or in the place today. And so I'm looking back at 85 years. Wow. And yet that's just a pittance of time. He looks at a long, long time. In that same chapter are these words, a little bit later. Listen, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone, and you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength. Does that sound familiar? It gets quoted over and over again. Continuing on with that, and you must commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these commands that I am giving you today. Repeat them again and again to your children. Carrying it on again, folks. Talk about them when you are at home and when you're on the road, when you are going to bed and when you're getting up. And in chapter 7, you hear these words, and there's a reason behind them. You must destroy all the nations the Lord your God hands over to you. Now, this doesn't sound like a bit of good news, really, but there's reasons for it, aren't there? Show them no mercy and do not worship their gods, or they will trap you. You must burn their idols in fire. You suffer. You must not cover the silver, covet the silver or gold that covers them. You must not take it, or it will become a trap for you, for it is detestable to the Lord your God. He feels very, very strongly about this. How did they feel? How did they respond? In addition to responsibilities are warnings. Chapter 4, and this is a rather lengthy one. Listen to it carefully. Be careful not to break the covenant the Lord your God has made with you. Do not make idols of any shape or form, for the Lord your God has forbidden this. The Lord your God is a devouring fire. He is a jealous God. In the future, when you have children and grandchildren and have lived in the land a long time, do not corrupt yourselves by making idols of any kind. This is evil in the sight of the Lord your God and will arouse his anger. Today, I call on heaven and earth as witnesses against you. If you break my covenant, you will quickly disappear from the land you are crossing the Jordan to occupy. You will live there only a short time, then you will be utterly destroyed, for the Lord will scatter you among the nations where only a few of you will survive. There, in a foreign land, you will worship idols made from wood and stone, gods that neither see nor hear nor eat nor smell. You've just been introduced to the second part of this whole picture. Deuteronomy is a history lesson and a prophecy class, all combined into one. What God has done for them in the past, what he knows is coming in the future. They might not believe that at that point, but it is a true prophecy, and he is telling them what's going to happen. Another warning: be careful not to forget the Lord who rescued you from the land of Egypt. Don't forget him. And they did. Sometimes we do. And if you ever forget the Lord your God and follow other gods, worshiping and bowing down to them, you will certainly be destroyed. And then the next sentence brings it home closer to them. Remember where they are and what they've done at this point. They are on the banks of Jordan, ready to enter. And he's warning them now with this additional word: just as the Lord has destroyed other nations in your path, you also will be destroyed if you refuse to obey the Lord your God. He cannot make the point any stronger than he's making it. In chapter 28, we have two sets of material. It's the longest chapter in Deuteronomy, 68 verses. It is comprised almost entirely of blessings and curses. Those curses are a warning. And the curses that I want to point out to you start with an introduction in verse 15. If you refuse to listen to the Lord your God and do not obey all the commands and decrees I'm giving you today, all these curses now that follow from verse 15 to verse 68 will come and overwhelm you. I've picked only a very, very, very small portion of them, verses 18 and 19. Your children and your crops will be cursed. The offspring of your herds and flocks will be cursed. Wherever you go and whatever you do, you will be cursed. And then up in verses 45 to 48, we have another picture of these warnings. If you refuse to listen to the Lord your God and to obey the commands and decrees he has given you, all these curses will pursue and overtake you until you are destroyed. Heard that word before too, haven't we? The Lord will bring a distant nation against you. No, I'm sorry. I've got to get back to verse 46. These horrors will serve as a sign and warning among you and your descendants forever. If you do not serve the Lord your God with joy and enthusiasm, I like that word, enthusiasm, for the abundant benefits you have received, you will serve your enemies. You get the contrast? If you don't serve God, you'll serve the enemy. Let's pick this on up. Your enemies, whom the Lord will send against you. You will be left hungry, thirsty, naked, and lacking in everything. The Lord will put an iron yoke on your neck, oppressing you harshly until he has destroyed you. There's consequences, folks. There are. Verse 49 says this: the Lord will bring a distant nation against you from the end of the earth, and it will swoop down on you like a vulture. That's quite a warning. So let's take a look at the blessings, because I love the blessings. So we can look at chapter 4 again. If you obey, we've heard about if you don't obey, but if you obey all the decrees and commands I am giving you today, all will be well with you and your children. I love that. I am giving you these instructions so you will enjoy a long life in the land the Lord your God is giving you for all time. And then a promise about the immediate future for them here in chapter 6. The Lord your God will soon bring you into the land he swore to give you when he made a vow to your ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It is a land with large, prosperous cities that you did not build. The houses will be richly stocked with goods you did not produce. You will draw water from cisterns you did not dig. And you will eat from vineyards and olive trees you did not plant. He's giving them the best things they could ask for. Their life revolved around their agriculture, their families. And that's where the blessings are targeted that he talks about here. In chapter 7, I'll pick it up partway in here. He will love you and bless you, and he will give you many children. He will give fertility to your land and your animals. When you arrive in the land he swore to give your ancestors, you will have large harvests of grain, new wine, olive oil, great herds of cattle, sheep, and goats. You will be blessed above all the nations of the earth. None of your men or women will be childless, and all your livestock will bear young. And the Lord will protect you from all sickness. He will not let you suffer from the terrible diseases you knew in Egypt, but he will afflict them on all your enemies. Do you like these blessings? They were looking forward to success, to joy, to happiness. And in chapter 28, if we go back to it and we look at the first 13 verses, that's where the blessings were in that chapter. And I want to read to you the first 4 verses of that. If you fully obey the Lord your God and carefully keep his commands that I am giving you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the world. You will experience all these blessings if you obey the Lord your God. Your towns and your fields will be blessed. Your children and your crops will be blessed. The offspring of your herds and flocks will be blessed. He's talking to them about the things that are important to them in their lives. I go up to verse 7. The Lord will conquer your enemies when they attack you. They will attack you from one direction, and they'll scatter in 7 directions. And then we go to verses 9 and 10. If you obey the commands of the Lord your God and walk in his ways, the Lord will establish you as his holy people, as he swore to do. Then all the nations of the world will see that you are a people claimed by the Lord, and they will stand in awe of you. Now that's a job they have ahead of them. It's a responsibility they have and a blessing they're going to enjoy if they follow the Lord. Then we get to chapter 32. Two chapters in this book stand out. The one we've just been reading from, 28, is the longest chapter, full of blessings and curses. But chapter 32 is a magnificent song. The Song of Moses. And as we go through this, I'm going to point out who is actually the focus of this song as Moses recites it to the Israelites. Starting with verse 1, "Listen, O heavens, and I will speak." Jessica just read those to you. I mean, Beth. Which one of you read them? Oh, it was Beth back there. Yeah. The family confuses me. Beth just read these. What version were you reading from, Beth?
New King James.
New King James. I'm reading from the New Living Translation, and they are not that much different. Listen to these again. "Listen, O heavens, and I will speak. Hear, O earth, the words I say. Let my teaching fall on you like rain. Let my speech settle like dew, let my words fall like rain on tender grass, like gentle showers on young plants." Here we have a man 120 years old who is going to die within a few days. And he is proclaiming the goodness of the Lord in poetic verse. And it continues, "I will proclaim the name of the Lord. How glorious is our God. He is the rock. His deeds are perfect. Everything he does is just and fair. He is a faithful God who does no wrong. How just and upright he is." And then speaking to Israel, Moses speaks here, but they have acted, no, he's speaking about Israel. About Israel, to whom? To the heavens, to the angels, to the occupants of other worlds. But he's not very complimentary about the Israelites. They have acted corruptly toward him when they act so perversely. Are they really his children? They are a deceitful and twisted generation. Now speaking directly to them, "Is this the way you repay the Lord, you foolish and senseless people? Isn't he your father who created you? Has he not made you and established you? Remember the days of long ago. Think about the generations past. Ask your father and he will inform you. Inquire of your elders and they will tell you." Now he's speaking again to the universe. "When the Most High assigned lands to the nations, when he divided up the human race, he established the boundaries of the peoples according to the number in his heavenly court. For the people of Israel belong to the Lord. Jacob is his special possession. He found them in a desert land, in an empty, howling wasteland. He surrounded them and watched over them. He guarded them as he would guard his own eyes. Like an eagle that rouses her chicks and hovers over her young, so he spreads his wings to take them up and carry them safely on his pinions. The Lord alone guided them. They followed no foreign gods. He let them ride over the highlands and feast on the crops of the fields. He nourished them with honey from the rock and with olive oil from the stony ground. He fed them yogurt from the herd and milk from the flock, and together with the fat of the lambs. He gave them choice rams from Bashan and goats together with the choicest wheat." Now he's speaking directly to the Israelites again. "You drank the finest wine made from the juice of grapes." Now to the universe again. "But Israel soon became fat and unruly. The people grew heavy, plump, and stuffed. Then they abandoned the God who had made them. They made light of the rock of their salvation. They stirred up his jealousy by worshiping foreign gods. They provoked his fury with detestable deeds. They offered sacrifices to demons which are not God, to gods they had not known before, to new gods only recently arrived, to gods their ancestors had never feared." back to the Israelites. You neglected the rock who had fathered you. You forgot the God who had given you birth. The Lord saw this and drew back, provoked to anger by his own sons and daughters. And now God speaks. He said, I will abandon them. Then see what becomes of them. For they are a twisted generation, children without integrity. They have roused my jealousy by worshiping things that are not God. They have provoked my anger with their useless idols. Now I will rouse their jealousy through people who are not even a people. I will provoke their anger through the foolish Gentiles. For my anger blazes forth like fire and burns to the depths of the grave. It devours the earth and all its crops and ignites the foundation of the mountains. I will heap disasters upon them and shoot them down with my arrows. I will weaken them with famine, burning fever, and deadly disease. I will send the fangs of wild beasts and poisonous snakes that glide in the dust. Outside, the sword will bring death, and inside, terror will strike both young men and young women, both infants and aged. I would have annihilated them, wiping out even the memory of them, but I feared the taunt of Israel's enemy, who might misunderstand and say, our own power has triumphed. The Lord had nothing to do with this. Moses has this comment to make in response. But Israel is a senseless nation. The people are foolish without understanding. Oh, that they were wise and could understand this. Oh, that they might know their fate. How could one person chase 1,000 of them and two people put 10,000 to flight unless their rock had sold them, unless the Lord had given them up? But the rock of our enemies is not like our rock. Even they recognize. Their vine grows from the vine of Sodom, from the vineyards of Gomorrah. Their grapes are poisoned, their clusters are bitter. Their wine is the venom of serpents, the deadly poison of cobras. And God has this to say about that. Am I not storing up these things, sealing them away in my treasury? I will take revenge. I will pay them back. In due time, their feet will slip. Their day of disaster will arrive, and their destiny will overtake them. Moses, again, to the universe. Indeed, the Lord will give justice to his people, and he will change his mind about his servants when he sees their strength is gone and no one is left, slave or free. And finally, God's last statement. Where are their gods and rocks they fled to for refuge? Where now are those gods who ate the fat of their sacrifices and drank the wine of their offerings? Let those gods arise and help you. Let them provide you with shelter. Look now, I am myself am he. There is no other god but me. I am the one who kills and gives life. I am the one who wounds and heals. No one can be rescued from my powerful hand. Now I raise my hand to heaven and declare, as surely as I live, when I sharpen my flashing sword and begin to carry out justice, I will take revenge on my enemies and repay those who reject me. I will make my arrows drunk with blood, and my sword will devour flesh, the blood of the slaughtered and the captives and the heads of the enemy leaders. And then Moses ends on this triumphant sound. Rejoice with him, O heavens, and let all of God's angels worship him. Rejoice with his people, you nations, and let all the angels be strengthened in him. For he will avenge the blood of his servants. He will take revenge against his enemies. He will repay those who hate him and cleanse the land for his people. Quite a song. It's almost like a dramatic opera. But this was fact, not fiction. What should we learn from this story? This is a promise story. Remember that. What is there for us to learn from that story? How does it relate to your life, to my life, our lives today? If we can't learn something from it, we've lost an opportunity. Let me ask you this question. How do our temptations today compare with the temptations Israel encountered? Do we live among enemy nations that want to destroy us? For most of my life, I've lived in what I felt was a very protected, safe environment. I've not feared invasion from enemies, plagues that decimate our population, natural disasters that overwhelm us. But in the last few years, we have experienced COVID around the world. We are acutely aware of wars in Ukraine between Israel and Hamas. These are traumatic for those who live there where it's happening. So where is the danger in our lives? Could it be how we're spending our time? Could it be the time we spend watching television? Or watching stuff on the computer, or on our phones. We could be but we shouldn't be, should we? Where should our priorities be? In our Sabbath school lesson today, Larry made some very, very good points about where our focus should be. Instead of being focused on entertainment, shouldn't we be focused on eternity? How does eternity become real for us? It starts here and now. A close, tight connection with God. A relationship that nothing can distract us from or disturb. That's what every one of us needs. And it's not onerous, it's not difficult. In fact, it should be the most joyful part of our lives. When you have the confidence that you know you are in complete harmony with God, with our Savior that is our Creator, that wants to recreate us in His likeness. What more can you ask for in life than that? I need to keep my focus on eternal realities. Do you? On those around me that I can and should be inviting and encouraging to get to know and love God. On those in need that I can help. Those are God's priorities. They need to be mine. The warning that God gave Israel that becoming plump, heavy, and stuffed should lead to my taking God seriously. Let him take over my life. Guide me. Use us to comfort and aid others. Show them how much God loves us, how much God loves them. And he wants them to be with him for eternity, just like he wants you to be with him for eternity. He wanted to do that for Israel, and he wants to do that for each of us. That's the prophecy class in the story of promise.